The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhar samatho, sabbo padhipatini saggo, tannakyo, virago, nirodho, nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all deserts, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monk, this is the 16th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In the course of our discussion of the Bahya Sutta in our last sermon, we drew attention to the wide gap that exists between the sensory experience of the worldling and that experience the Arahant gets through the eye of wisdom. It is the same gap that obtains between the two terms papancha and nipapancha. In sensory experience, which is based on worldly expressions, worldly usages and worldly concepts, there is a discrimination between a thing to be grasped and the one who grasps, or in other words, a subject-object relationship. There is always a bifurcation, a dichotomy, in the case of sensory perception. If there is a seen, there has to be something seen and one who sees. That is the logic. In the Bahya Sutta, beginning with "in the seen there will be just the seen," the Buddha proclaimed to the ascetic Bahya a brief exhortation on Dhamma which enables one to transcend the above narrow viewpoint and attain the state of non-proliferation or nipapancha. There is nothing to see, no one to see, only a seeing is there. The cause of all these conceptual proliferation of papancha in the world is contact. The Arahants understood this by their insight into the fact that the seen, the heard, the sensed and the cognized are simply so many collocations of conditions which come together for a moment due to contact, only to break up and get dispersed the next moment. What is called the seen, the heard, the sensed and the cognized are, for the worldling, so many things. But to the wisdom eye of the Arahants, they appear as mere conglomerations of conditions, dependent on contact, which momentarily come together and then get dispersed. This insight into the dependence on contact, pasampaticca, is the very essence of the law of dependent arising, paticca samuppada. It is equivalent to seeing the law of dependent arising itself. In order to transcend the narrow point of view limited to the basis of sense contact, or the six sense spheres, and realize the state of Nibbana indicated by the words Vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbato pabham, consciousness which is non-manifestative, endless, lustrous on all sides, one has to see the cessation of contact. In a certain discourse in the Muchalindavagga of the Udana, the Buddha has declared in a verse of uplift that the cessation of contact comes about only by doing away with that which brings about contact. The wandering ascetics of other sects grew jealous of the Buddha and his congregation of monks because of their own loss of gain and honor, and began to hurl abuse on monks in the village and in the forest. A group of monks came and reported this to the Buddha. The Buddha's response to it was only a pain of joy. Udana actually means a spontaneous utterance of joy, and the verse he uttered was such a one. But it embodied an instruction on Dhamma and a norm of Dhamma as well. ගාමී අරන්නේ සුඛ දුක්ඛ පුට්ටෝ නේවත්තතෝ නෝපරතෝ දහේත පුසන්ති පස්සා උපධින් පටිච්ච නිරූපධින් කේන පුසෙයුම් පස්ස. In the first two lines we get an instruction. Touched by pain in village or in forest, think not in terms of oneself or others. The reason for it is given in the norm of Dhamma which follows. Touches can touch one because of assets. How can touches touch him who is assetless? This is all what the Buddha uttered. From this we can glean another aspect of the significance of the terms Sabbupadhipatinisag, relinquishment of all assets, and Nirupadhi, the assetless, used with reference to Nibbana. In a number of previous sermons, we happen to explain the concept of Upadhi to some extent. As and when the terms Upadhi and Patinisaga came up, to refresh our memory, we may summarize all that now. What is the concept of Upadhi or assets recognized by the world? Whatever that bolsters up the ego, be it gold, silver, pearls, gems, money, house and property, deposits and assets. All these are reckoned as Upadhi in general. But when considered from the point of view of Dhamma, Upadhi in a deeper sense stands for these fivefold grasping groups, Panchupadana Khanda. Upadana Khanda literally means groups of grasping. Groups of grasping do not necessarily imply that there are material objects to be grasped. But the worldling, overcome by that triple proliferation of cravings, conceits and views, and carried away by the worldly conventions, imagines those groups of grasping as things grasped and deposited. The concept of Upadhi as assets has arisen as a result of this tendency to think of groups of grasping as things grasped and deposited. So it turns out to be a question of viewpoint. Craving, conceits and views prompt one to look upon all what one has grasped so far and what one hopes to grasp in the future as things one is grasping right now. One thinks of them as things deposited in a safe. The worldlings are holding on to such a mass of assets. Nibbana is the relinquishment of all such assets accumulated in the mind. In order to relinquish these assets, there must be some kind of understanding and enlightenment. The vanity of all these assets has to be seen through the light of wisdom. It is only by seeing their vanity that the assets are relinquished. In fact, it is not so much a deliberate giving up of assets as a sequential liquidation. In a previous sermon, we gave an illustration of the situation that precipitates relinquishment. Let us bring it up again. We found the cinema quite helpful as an illustration. In explaining the phenomenon of relinquishment of assets with reference to the cinema, we described how the assets accumulated in the minds of the audience, that is, the assets proper to the cinema world, woven around the story that is filmed, are automatically abandoned when the cinema hall gets lit up. Then one understands the illusory nature of what has been going on. It is that understanding, that enlightenment, which precipitates the giving up or relinquishment of assets. To go a step further in this illustration, when light came on, the sankharas or preparations pertaining to the film show got exposed for what they are. In fact, sankhara is a word that has associations with the dramatic tradition in its relation to the acting of actors and actresses down to their makeup, which is so artificial and spurious. When the cinema hall gets lit up all of a sudden, one who has been enjoying the film show is momentarily thrown out of the cinema world because those preparations are pacified or nullified. Sabba sankhara samatho. As a consequence of it, the heap of experiences which he had hitherto regarded as real and genuine lose their sanction. Those assets get liquidated or relinquished, sabbopadhipatinisagga. In their absence, that craving necessary for the appreciation or enjoyment of the scenes to come becomes extinct, tantakkhayo. When When craving is gone, the floridity of the scenes to come also fades away, viraga. With that fading away or decoloration, the film show ceases for the person concerned, nirodha. Though technically the movie is going on. Because of that cessation, all the fires of defilements proper to the cinema world with which he was burning get extinguished, nibbana. So here we have the full gamut of the cinema simile as an illustration for nibbana. This kind of awakening in the cinema world gives us a clue to the fact that the assets, upadhi, are relinquished through an understanding born of enlightenment in the light of wisdom. This, in fact, is something that should be deeply ingrained in our minds. Therefore, we shall endeavor to give some more illustrations to that effect. In our everyday life, too, we sometimes see and hear of instances where assets get relinquished due to understanding. Someone heaps up a huge bundle of currency notes of the highest denomination, deposits it in his safe, and keeps watch and ward over it day and night. One fine morning, he wakes up to hear that for some reason or other, that currency note has been fully devalued by law the previous night. How does he look upon the wads of notes in his safe now? For him, it is now a mere heap of papers. The craving, conceit and will he had earlier in regard to the notes are completely gone. The bank notes are no longer valid. He might as well make a bonfire of it. So this is some sort of relinquishment of assets in the world, however temporary it may be. Another person gets a sudden transfer and is getting ready to leave for his new station. His immovable assets he is forced to leave behind, but his movable assets he hurriedly gathers up to take with him. The vehicle has already come and is tooting impatiently, signaling delay. It is well past time, but his preparations are not finished. Time pressed in hot haste, he is running here and there. At last, when he can delay no longer, he grabs the utmost he can take and darts to the doorstep. Just then he wakes up. It was only a dream. The transfer came in a dream. No real vehicle, no real preparation, only a panting for nothing. So here we have an awakening peculiar to the dream world. This is an instance of letting go of assets connected with the dream. We go through such experiences quite often. Of course, we take it for granted that when we pass from the dream world to the real world, the assets proper to the dream world drop off. But are we sure that in leaving the dream world, we are entering a real world? Is awakening from a dream a true awakening when considered from the point of view of the Dhamma? Do we actually open our eyes when we awaken from a dream? Terms like Buddha, Bodhi and Sambodhi convey the sense of awakening as well as understanding. Sometimes in the Dhamma, the emphasis is on the sense of awakening. Here then is a kind of awakening. Expressions like Dhamma Chakhu, Dhamma Eye, Panya Chakhu, Wisdom Eye, and Chakhu Mudapadi, the eye arose. We speak of an arising of some sort of an eye. We already have eyes, but an eye is said to arise. All this goes to show that in the context of Nibbana, where we are concerned with the deep aspects of the Dhamma, the awakening from a dream is not a true awakening. It is only a passage from one dream world to another. But let us see how the concept of upadhi or assets goes deeper. What lies before us is the dream of samsara. In order to awaken from this dream, we have to understand somehow the vanity of all assets connected with the dream that is samsara. The fact that this understanding also comes through some illumination we have already explained the other day in our discussion of the Pyan of Joy at the end of the Bhaya Sutta. As we pointed out then, the world of the six sense bases, with the worldlings regarded as their world, when examined against the background of that Udana verse, reveals itself to be no more than 6 narrow beams of light appearing through a solidly thick curtain, namely the darkness of delusion. We happened to mention the other day that the sun, the moon, and the stars shine precisely because of the presence of darkness. In the non-manifestative consciousness, which is infinite and lustrous all around, Vijnanam Anidarsanam Anantam Sampatopabham, sun, moon, and stars are not manifest because there is absolutely no darkness for them to shine for. Even the formless, which is the penumbra of form, disappears in their penetrative luster of wisdom. So the relinquishment of all assets, Nibbana, is not like the other temporary awakenings already mentioned. Those three instances of awakening are of a temporary nature. The awakening in the cinema world is extremely short-lived. That film fan, although he became disenchanted with the scenes because of the unexpected sudden illumination of the cinema hall, when it is dark again, influxes of sensuality, existence and ignorance so overwhelm him that he gets engrossed in the cinema world as before. The case of the devalued currency note is also like that. Though the cravings, conceits and views about the devalued note are gone, one still runs after notes that are valid. As for the awakening from a dream, we all know that it is temporary. When again we go to sleep, we have dreams. But the awakening in Nibbana is not of such a temporary character. Why? Because all the influxes that lead one into the samsaric slumber with its dreams of recurrent births are made extinct in the light of that perfect knowledge of realization. That is why the term Masavakya, extinction of influxes, is used in the discourses as an epithet of Nibbana. The Arahants accomplish this feat in the concentration on the fruit of Arahanthood, Arahatta Phala Samadhi. Though there are enough instances of references to this Arahatta Phala Samadhi in the discourses, they are very often interpreted differently. As we have already seen in the context of that verse of uplift in the Bahya Sutta, some discourses alluding to the nature of an Arahant's mind have been misinterpreted, so much so that there is a lot of confusion in regard to the concept of Nibbana. As a matter of fact, that concentration peculiar to an Arahant is of an extraordinary type. It baffles the worldling's powers of understanding. This can well be inferred from the following verse of the Ratana Sutta. Yang buddha setho parivanna isuching samadhimanan tariganya maho samadhina tena samo navijyati idam pidhamme ratanam panitam etena satyena suvatti ho. That pure concentration which the supremely awakened one extolled, that concentration which the noble ones called immediate, there is no concentration comparable to it. This is the excellent jewel nature of the Dhamma. By the power of this truth, may there be well-being. This incomparable and extraordinary concentration has given rise to many problems concerning the concept of Nibbana. The extraordinariness of this concentration of the Arahant is to some extent connected with the term Anantarika referred to above. Now let us turn our attention to the significance of this term. The verse says that the concentration of the Arahant is also known as Anantarika. The term Anantarika is suggestive of an extraordinary aspect of the realization of Nibbana. Immediately after the extinction of the defilements through the knowledge of the path of Arahanthood, one realizes Nibbana, the cessation of existence or the cessation of the six sense bases. As we mentioned earlier, it is as if the results are out as soon as one has written for an examination. One need not wait for the results. Realization is immediate. There is a special term to denote this experience of realization, namely Anya. It is a highly significant term derived from ajanati, to know fully. Anya is full comprehension. The concentration of the fruit of Arahanthood is also called Anya Phala Samadhi and Anya Vimokha. Anya carries with it a high degree of importance. we come across in the sutta terminology a number of terms derived from the root ñā, to know, namely sannyā, viññāna, paññā, ñāna, abhiññā, pariññā, aññā. Sannyā is perception, viññāna is radically discriminative knowledge, paññā is distinctive knowledge, ñāna is knowledge as such, abhiññā is specialized knowledge, pariññā is comprehensive knowledge, aññā is that final knowledge of certitude through realization. The high degree of importance attached to aññā is revealed by the following two verses in the Itivuttaka. Sekhasya sikhamanasya ujumaggānusvārino khayasmiṃ pathamaṃ jñānaṃ tato aññā anantara tato aññā vimuttasya jñānaṃ vehoditādino akuppāme vimuttīti bhava sanyojanakhe. To the disciple in higher training, as he fares along, training according to the straight path, there arises first the knowledge of distinction, and then immediately the final knowledge of certitude. And to that steadfast such-like one, thus released by final knowledge of certitude, there arises the thought, unshakable is my deliverance, upon the destruction of fetters of existence. It is evident from these two verses that the realization referred to is in many ways final and complete. In point of fact, these two verses have been presented by the Buddha in this context by way of defining three things relevant to the realization of Nibbana. These three are called faculties, indriya. They are 1. Ananyata nyasamitindriya, 2. Anyindriya, 3. Anyatavindriya. The term anya is implicit even in the faculty called ananyata nyasamitindriya. Ananyata nyasami means, I shall know what has not been fully known. This is the definition of what in the verse is referred to as khayasmi patmanyana. First, there is the knowledge of extinction. The knowledge of the extinction of the defilements is called ananyata nyasami tindriya in this context. The words tato anya anantara and then immediately the final knowledge of certitude refer to that faculty of final knowledge or anyindriya. The knowledge that prompts the conviction unshakable is my deliverance is the knowledge and vision of deliverance, which is defined as anyatavindriya. It refers to one who is endowed with the final knowledge of certitude. The difference between anyindriya and anyatavindriya is a subtle one. For instance, the expression bhuktavi pavarito, one has finished eating and made a sign of refusal, decisively shows that one has had one's fill. Similarly, it is that anyatavindriya, note the past active participle, which prompts the words unshakable is my deliverance, akuppame vimutti. The knowledge and vision of deliverance is reassuring to that extent. As the above quoted verse from the Ratana Sutta makes it clear, this unique and extraordinary concentration has been extolled by the Buddha in various discourses. But for some reason or other, the commentators have simply glossed over references to it, though they sometimes expatiate on a particle of mere grammatical interest. Let us now take up for comment a few such discourses. In the section of the 11th in the Anguttara Nikaya, there comes a discourse called Sandha Sutta. There, the Buddha gives to Venerable Sandha a description of a level of concentration characteristic of an excellent thoroughbred of a man. It is a strange type of concentration. One who has that concentration is described as follows. Suneva pathavi nissaya jayati, napam nissaya jayati, tejam nissaya jayati, na vayam nissaya jayati, na akasanam chayatanam nissaya jayati, na vinyanam chayatanam nissaya jayati, na akinchan jayatanam nissaya jayati, na nevasanyana sanyayatanam nissaya jayati, na idhalokam nissaya jayati, na paralokam nissaya jayati, yampidam dittham sutam utam vinyatam pattam pariyesitam anuvicharitam manasa thampi nissaya na jayati, jayati cha panam. evam jhayanti panasandhe bhadram purisajaniyam sainda deva sabrahmaka sapajapatika arkava namasanti namote purisajanya namote purisuttama yasate nabhijanama yampinissaya jhayasi. In this discourse, the Buddha gives as an illustration the musing of a thoroughbred of a horse, which we shall drop for brevity's sake. The musing of an excellent thoroughbred of a man is described as follows. He muses not dependent on earth, water, fire, air, the sphere of infinite space, the sphere of infinite consciousness, the sphere of nothingness, the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. He muses not dependent on this world or on the world beyond. Whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, attained, sought after, traversed by the mind, dependent on all that, he muses not, and yet he does muse. Moreover, Sandha, to him thus musing, the Devas sit Indra with Brahma and with Prajapati, even from afar bow down, saying, homage to you, O thoroughbred of a man, homage to you, O most excellent of men, what it is on which you go on musing, we are at a loss to comprehend. Though all possible objects of concentration are negated, the Buddha affirms that he does muse. Venerable Sandha, out of curiosity, inquires, but then how, Lord, does that thoroughbred of a man muse? The Buddha explains that while in that state of concentration, the perception of earth in earth, for instance, is gone for him. Patavya, patavisanya, vibhuta hoti. So also in the case of other objects of the senses, such as water, fire, air, down to whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, attained, sought after, and traversed by the mind. The verb vibhuta, repeatedly used in this connection, is however differently interpreted in the commentary. It is paraphrased by pakata, which means clearly manifest. This interpretation seems to distort the meaning of the entire passage. It is true that in certain contexts, vibhuta and avibhuta are taken to mean manifest and unmanifest, since vibhava is a word which seems to have undergone some semantic development. However, its primary sense is sufficiently evident in the sutta terminology. For instance, the twin term bhava-vibhava stands for existence and non-existence. In this context too, vibhuta seems to have a negative sense rather than the sense of being manifest. Hence our rendering. The perception of earth is gone for him. It is obvious enough by the recurrent negative particle in the first part of the sutta. Neva patavin nissaya jhayati, na apang nissaya jhayati, etc. That all those perceptions are negated and not affirmed as manifest. The commentator seems to have missed the true import of the sutta when he interprets vibhuta to mean manifest. If further proof is required, we may quote instances where the word vibhuta is used in the suttas to convey such senses as gone, departed or transcended. In one of the verses we happened to quote earlier from the Kalahavivada Sutta, there was the question posed, kismin vibhutena pusanti passa, when what is not there do touches not touch? The verse that follows gives the answer, rupe vibhutena pusanti passa, when form is not there, touches do not touch. In this context too, vibhuta implies absence. A clear instance comes in the posalamana puccha of the parayana magga in the sutta nipata, namely, the term vibhuta rupa sannissa occurring in one of the verses there. The canonical commentary Chudanidesa, which the commentator often draws upon, also paraphrases the term with the words vigata, atikkanta, samatikkanta, vitivatta, gone, transcended, fully transcended and superseded. So the word vibhuta in the passage in question definitely implies the absence of all those perceptions in that concentration. This then is a unique concentration. It has none of the objects which the worldlings usually associate with a level of concentration. We come across a number of instances in the discourses in which the Buddha and some other monks have been interrogated on the nature of this extraordinary concentration. Sometimes even Venerable Ananda is seen to confront the Buddha with a question on this point. In a discourse included in the section of the 11th in the Anguttara Nikaya, Venerable Ananda questions on the possibility of attaining to such a concentration with an air of wonderment. Siyanuko bhante bhikkhuno tatharupo samadhipatilabho yatha neva pathaviyam pathavisanyas na apasming aposanyas na tejasming tejosanyas na vayasming vayosanyas na akasanan chayatane sanyas na vinyanan chayatane sanyas ආකින්චඤ්ඤායතනේ ආකින්චඤ්ඤායතන සංඤ්ඤස්ස නේව සංඥානා සංඤ්ඤායතනේ නේව සංඥානා සංඤ්ඤායතන සංඤ්ඤස්ස නෙයිදලෝකේ ඉදලෝක සංඤ්ඤස්ස න පරලෝකේ පරලෝක සංඤ්ඤස්ස යම්පි දන් දිඨං සුතං මුතං විඤ්ඤාතං පත්තං පරිසිතං අනුචරිතං මනිසා තත්‍රාපින සංඤ්ඤස්ස සංඤ්ඤේච පනස. Could there be, Lord, for a monk such an attainment of concentration wherein he will not be conscious, literally percipient, of earth in earth, nor of water in water, nor of fire in fire, nor of air in air, nor will he be conscious of the sphere of infinite space, in the sphere of infinite space, nor of the sphere of infinite consciousness, in the sphere of infinite consciousness, nor of the sphere of nothingness, in the sphere of nothingness, nor of the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, in the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, nor will he be conscious of a this world in this world, nor of a world beyond in a world beyond, whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, attained, sought after, traversed by the mind, even of it he will not be conscious, and yet he will be conscious. Whereas the passage quoted earlier began with so neva patavinisaya jhayati, he muses not dependent on earth, and ended with the emphatic assertion, jhayati chapana, and yet he does muse, here we have a restatement of it in terms of perception. Beginning with neva pataviyam patavisanyya and ending with sanyicha panas. The Buddha answers in the affirmative, and on being questioned as to how it is possible, he gives the following explanation. Idhananda bhikkhu evam sanyi hoti etam santam etam panitam yadidam sabba sankhara samatho sabbo patipati nissaggo tannakkhayo virago nirodho nibbanati. Even ko ananda siya bhikkhuno tatharupo samadhipati labho. Here in Ananda, a monk is thus conscious, evam sanyi. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. It is thus, Ananda, that there could be for a monk such an attainment of concentration. This, in fact, is the theme of all our sermons. Venerable Ananda, of course, rejoiced in the Buddha's words, but approached Venerable Sariputta also and put forward the same question. Venerable Sariputta gave the same answer verbatim. Then Venerable Ananda gave expression to a joyous approbation. Acharyang also, abhutang also, yatrahi nama sattuca savakasya athena athang, vyanjanina vyanjanang sang sandhisati samisati navigahisati jadidang agga padasmi. Friend, it is wonderful, it is marvelous that there is perfect conformity between the statements of the teacher and the disciple to the letter and to the spirit without any discord on the question of the highest level of attainment. These last words in particular make it sufficiently clear that this concentration is arahatta phala samadhi, the concentration proper to an arahant. Here then is the experience of Nibbana, extraordinary and unique. Quite a number of discourses touch upon this samadhi. Let us take up some of the more important references. Venerable Ananda is seen to pose the same question rephrased on yet another occasion. It runs thus. Siyanuko bhante tatharupo samadhi patilabho yatha ne chakkum manasikareyana rupam manasikareyana sotam manasikareyana saddam manasikareyana ghanam manasikareyana gandham manasikareyana divam manasikareyana rasam manasikareyana na kayam manasikareyana pottabbam manasikareyana patavim manasikareyana apam manasikareyana tejam manasikareyana vayam manasikareyana apasanam chayatanam manasikareyana නවිඥානං ඡායතනං මනසිකරේන අවිඤ්ඤාඥාතනං මනසිකරේන නේම සංඥානා සංඥාතනං මනසිකරේය නයිදලෝකං මනසිකරේන පරලෝකං මනසිකරේය යම්පිදං දිඨං සුතං මුතං විඤ්ඤාතං පත්තං පරිසිතං අනුවිචරිතං මනසා තම්පින මනසිකරේය මනසිච පන කරේය. Could there be Lord for a monk such an attainment of concentration, wherein he will not be attending to the eye, nor to form, nor to the ear, nor to sound, nor to the nose, nor to smell, nor to the tongue, nor to taste, nor to the body, nor to touch, nor to earth, nor to water, nor to fire, nor to air, nor to the sphere of infinite space, nor to the sphere of infinite consciousness, nor to the sphere of nothingness, nor to the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, nor to this world, nor to the world beyond, whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, attained, sought after, travels by the mind, even to that he will not be attending, and yet he will be attending. There could be such a concentration, says the Buddha. And Venerable Ananda rejoins with his inquisitive, how, Lord, could there be? Then the Buddha gives the following explanation, which tallies with the one earlier given. ඉධානන්ද භික්ඛු එවං මනසි කරෝති ඒතං සන්තං ඒතං පණීතං යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සම්භූපති පරිනිසග්ගෝ තන්නක්ඛය විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බානති එවං කෝ ආනන්ද සියා භික්ඛුන තථා රූපෝ සමාධිපටිලාභ. Herein Ananda, a monk attains thus. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. It is thus, Ananda, that there could be such an attainment of concentration. In the light of the foregoing discussion, we are now in a position to take up for comment that enigmatic verse of the Kalahavivada Sutta, which in a previous sermon we left unexplained, giving only a slight hint in the form of a simile. Na sanya sanyi, na visanya sanyi, no piya sanyi, na vibhuta sanyi. එවං සමේතස්ස විභෝති රූපං සංඥා නිදානාහි පపంచ සංඛා. The general trend of this verse seems to imply something like this. The worldlings usually believe that one has to have some form of perception or other. But the one referred to in this verse is not percipient with any such perception, na sanya sanyi. As if to forestall the question whether he is then in a swoon, there is the negation na visanyasanyi. A possible alternative, like a plane of existence devoid of perception, is also avoided by the emphatic assertion no piyasanyi. Yet another possibility, that he has gone beyond perception or resigned at it, is rejected as well with the words na vibhutasanyi. The third line says that it is to one thus endowed that form ceases to exist, while the last line seems to give an indication as to why it is so. Sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. For reckonings born of proliferation have perception as their source. The nature of these reckonings we have already discussed at length. The conclusion here given is that they are rooted in papancha. Now the passages we have so far quoted are suggestive of such a state of consciousness. Briefly stated, even the emphatic note characteristic of these discourses is sufficient proof of it. For instance, in the first discourse we took up for discussion, there is the recurrent phrase na jhayati, does not muse, with reference to all the possible objects of the senses. But at the end of it all comes the emphatic assertion, chayati chapana. Nevertheless, he does muse. Similarly, the passage dealing with the sanya aspect starts with neva pataviyam patavisanyi. He is neither conscious, literally percipient, of earth in earth, followed by a long list of negations, only to end up with an emphatic sanya chapanas. But nevertheless, he is conscious. So also in the passage which takes up the attending aspect and winds up with the assertion manasi chapana karaya, and yet he will be attending. All this evidence is a pointer to the fact that we have to interpret the reference to the paradoxical state of consciousness implied by Nasanyasani, Navisanyasani, etc., in the Kalayavada Sutta, in the light of that unique concentration of the Arahat, the Arahata Phala Samadhi. This is obvious enough even if we take into consideration the occurrence of the term Papancha Sankha in the last line of the verse in question. The worldly concepts born of the prolific tendency of the mind are rooted in perception. That is precisely why perception has to be transcended. That is also the reason for our emphasis on the need for freedom from the six sense bases and from contact. The abandonment of Papancha Sankha is accomplished at this extraordinary level of concentration. The immense importance attached to the Arahata Phala Samadhi comes to light in the passages we have quoted. These discourses are abundant proof of the fact that the Buddha has extolled this Samadhi in various ways. The verse beginning with Nasanyasani and Navisanyasani in particular points to this fact. On an earlier occasion, we gave only a clue to its meaning in the form of an allusion to our simile of the cinema. That is to say, while one is watching a film show, if the cinema hall is fully illuminated all of a sudden, one undergoes such an internal transformation that it becomes questionable whether he is still seeing the film show. This is because his perception of the film show has undergone a peculiar change. He is no longer conscious of a film show, nor has he put an end to consciousness. It is a strange paradox. His gaze is actually a vacant gaze. The verse in question expresses such a vacant gaze. When the six sense bases of the Arahant cease and the luster of wisdom comes up, giving the conviction that all assets in the world are empty, the vision in the Arahata Phala Samadhi is as vacant as that gaze of the man at the cinema. It is neither conscious, nor unconscious, nor non-conscious, nor totally devoid of consciousness. At that level of concentration, even this material form is abandoned. The line in the pan of joy in the Bahya Sutta, which we came across the other day, Atha Rupa Arupa Cha Sukha Dukha Pamuchyati, and then from form and formless, and from pleasure and pain is he freed, can be better appreciated in the light of the foregoing discussion. With the relinquishment of all assets, even this body and the experience of a form and of a formless, as well as pleasure and pain, cease altogether due to the cessation of contact. That is why Nibbana is called a bliss devoid of feeling, Avedaita Sukha. Now, as to this vacant gaze, there is much to be said, though one might think that it is not at all worth discussing about. If someone asks us, what is the object of the gaze of one with such a vacant gaze, what shall we say? The vacant gaze is, in fact, not established anywhere, appatitta. It has no existence, appavatta, and it is objectless, anarambana. Even at the mention of these three terms, appatittham, appavattam and anarambanam, some might recall those highly controversial discourses on Nibbana. Why do we call the vision of the Arahant a vacant gaze? At the highest point of the development of the three characteristics, impermanence, suffering and not self, that is, through the three deliverances, animitta, appanihita and sunyata, the signless, the undirected and the void, the Arahant is now looking at the object with a penetrative gaze. That is why it is not possible to say what he is looking at. It is a gaze that sees the cessation of the object, a gaze that penetrates the object, as it were. When the cinema hall is fully illuminated, the mind of the one with that vacant gaze at the film show does not accumulate the stuff that makes up a film. Why? Because all those cinema preparations are now stilled. Cinema assets are relinquished and the craving and the passion for the cinema film have gone down, at least temporarily, with the result that the cinema film has ceased for him and he is extinguished within. That is why he is looking on with a vacant gaze. With this illustration, one can form an idea about the inner transformation that occurs in the Arahant. From the very outset, the meditator is concerned with sankharas or preparations. Hence the term Sabbasankhara Samatha, the stilling of all preparations, comes first. Instead of the arising aspect of preparations, he attends to the cessation aspect, the furthest limit of which is Nibbana. It is for that reason that the term Nirodha is directly applied to Nibbana. Simply because we have recapitulated the terms forming the theme of our sermons, some might think that the formula as such is some form of a gross object of the mind. This in fact is the root of the misconception prevalent today. It is true that the Buddha declared that the Arahant has as his perception, attention and concentration the formula beginning with etang santang, etang panitang, etc. But this does not mean that the Arahant in his samadhi goes on reciting the formula as we do at the beginning of every sermon. What it means is that the Arahant reverts to or reattains the realization he has already won through the lustre of wisdom, namely the realization of the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the total abandonment of the five aggregates, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, and extinguishment. That is what one has to understand by the saying that the Arahant attains to Nibbana as his object. The object is cessation, Nirodha. Here is something that Mara cannot grasp, that leaves him utterly clueless. This is why Venerable Nandiya in the Nandiya Theragatha challenges Mara in the following verse. Obhasa jatang phalagam chittam yasa abhindhasu tadisam bhikkhum asajya kanna dukkham nigacchasi. The monk whose mind is always bright and gone to the fruit of Arahanthood, should you dare to challenge that monk, oh, Blackie, you only come to grief. Kanna, Blackie, is one of the epithets of Mara. Even gods and Brahmas are unable to find out the object of the Arahant's mind when he is in the Phalasamapa, the attainment to the fruit. Mara can never discover it. That is why, if this attainment is said to leave Mara clueless or deluded, Mara Setang Pamohana, all this is due to the uniqueness of this level of concentration. The three deliverances, Animitta, Appanihita and Sunyata, are indeed extraordinary, and the verse Nasanya Sanyi refers to this Arahatapala Samadhi, which is signless, undirected and white. Usually, one's vision alights somewhere or picks up some object or other, but here is a range of vision that has no horizon. In general, there is a horizon at the furthest end of our range of vision. Standing by the seaside or in a plain, one gazes upon a horizon where the earth and sky meet. The worldling's range of vision in general has such a horizon, but the Arahant's range of vision as here described has no such horizon. That is why it is called Anantam, endless or infinite. Vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbatopabham, the non-manifestative consciousness, endless, lustrous on all sides. That vacant gaze is an endless perception. One who has it cannot be called conscious, sanyi, nor can he be called unconscious, visanyi, in the worldly sense of the term. Nor is he devoid of consciousness, asanyi, nor has he put an end to consciousness, vibhuta sanyi. Let us now take up two verses which shed a flood of light on the foregoing discussion and help illuminate the meaning of canonical passages that might come up later. The two verses are from the Arahanta Vagga of the Dhammapada. Ye sang sannicheyo nathi ye parinyata bhojana sunyato animitto cha vimokho ye sa gocharo akaseva sakuntanam gati te sang duranya yassasava parikhena ahare cha anisito sunyato animitto cha vimokho yassa gocharo akaseva sakuntanam padam tassa duranaya. Those who have no accumulations and understood fully the subject of food, and whose feeding ground is the void and the signless, their track is hard to trace like that of birds in the sky. He whose influxes are extinct and is unattached to nutriment, whose range is the deliverance of the void and the signless, His path is hard to trace like that of birds in the sky. The accumulation here meant is not of material things such as food. It is the accumulation of karma and upadhi, assets. The comprehension of food could be taken to imply the comprehension of all four nutriments, namely gross material food, contact, will and consciousness. The feeding ground of such arahants is the void and the signless. Hence their track is hard to trace like that of birds in the sky. The term gati, which we rendered by track, has been differently interpreted in the commentary. For the commentary, gati is the place where the arahant goes after death, his next born, so to speak. But taken in conjunction with the simile used, gati obviously means the path, padam, taken by the birds in the sky. It is the path they take that cannot be traced, not their destination. Where the birds have gone could perhaps be traced with some difficulty. They may have gone to their nests. It is the path they went by that is referred to as gati in this context. Just as when birds fly through the sky, they do not leave behind any trace of a path. Even so, in this concentration of the arahant, there is no object or sign of any continuity. The second verse gives almost the same idea. It is in singular and speaks of an arahant whose influxes are extinct and who is unattached to nutriment. Here, in the simile about the birds in the sky, we find the word padang, path, used instead of gati, which makes it clear enough that it is not the destiny of the arahant that is spoken of. The commentary, however, interprets both gati and padang as a reference to the arahant's destiny. There is a tacit assumption of some mysterious anupadi, says a nibbana dhatu. But what we have here is a metaphor of considerable depth. The reference is to that unique samadhi. The bird's flight through the air symbolizes the flight of the mind. In the case of others, the path taken by the mind can be traced through the object it takes, but not in this case. The key word that highlights the metaphorical meaning of these verses is gochara. Gochara means pasture. Now in the case of cattle roaming in their pasture, one can trace them by their footsteps, by the path trodden. What about the pasture of the arahants? Of course, they too consume food to maintain their bodies, but their true pasture is the arahata phala samadhi. As soon as they get an opportunity, they take to this pasture. Once they are well within this pasture, neither gods nor brahmas, no mara can find them. That is why the path taken by the arahants in the phala samadhi cannot be traced, like the track of birds in the sky. We have yet to discuss the subject of saupadisesa and anupadisesa nibbana dhatu. But even at this point, some clarity of understanding might emerge. When the arahant passes away at the last moment of his lifespan, he brings his mind to this arahata phala samadhi. Then not even mara can trace him. There is no possibility of a rebirth, and that is the end of all. It is this extinction that is referred to here. This extinction is not something one gets in a world beyond. It is a realization here and now, in this world. And the arahant, by way of blissful dwelling here and now, enjoys in his everyday life the supreme bliss of Nibbana that he had won through the incomparable deliverances of the mind.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.